CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It's your morning wake-up team to make sure that you actually wake up. Yes, we come and we shake you out of bed. We disturb your peaceful sleep. We remind you that even though it is dark outside, it is 6 o'clock and it's time to get cracking. Yes, yes, we are the evil angels of the morning who are here to guide you into your day. That's the best way to describe it, right, Leanne? I mean, we've been doing this a long time. We know what we're doing.
Yeah, I think it's important to know that wherever you are, getting up early, mm-hmm. with not even a bird really tweeting yet, mm-mm. you are not alone.
No,
we're
no.
here.
Not even the real tweeters tweeting yet.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The original animals that started tweeting long before us. The descendants of dinosaurs, yes. As Gord always reminds us. That's what we're here for. We're here to make sure that you're up and about and getting your things going and starting a day. All of that stuff. And it is dark and cold at 6 a.m. now. I mean, I can't see a single light outside. It is, I can't even see a glimmer of light yet. So can you see anything from where you are? You guys got any sun
no,
yet?
No, just street light. I can see a street light.
Mm-hmm. No, we're definitely...
And I could hear cats fighting earlier, which means... And they only do that during the night, so it means it's still night. Oh.
That's so great. No. Don't you love the way cats fight? It's such a pleasant sound, right? It's the best noise in the whole world. Anyway, so we're definitely in winter. I mean, there's very little doubt left in anyone's mind now. If you need any wake-up calls for why winter is on the doorstep, then you just need to walk outside in your underpants, I dare you, and then you'll see very quickly.
Yeah.
Get the nipple index.
The nipple index, that's right. We used to do that.
There's one step for me that's left to really make it winter, mm-hmm. which is when I start getting dressed in the bathroom after bathing, because that's the warmest place in the house. That will be the final step, but I haven't reached that yet.
You know, I think if I'm ever really, really, really rich, because we were talking about how energy is going to be one of the most expensive things in the future, even if everything else becomes cheaper, like paying for electricity is going to go up and up and up. But one day when I'm very, very rich, I will have a bathroom with a heated floor, and I'll be able to step out of the shower and onto warm tiles in the winter. That'll be like the ultimate luxury for me. I don't think it gets better than that.
You don't have to be very, very, very rich to
really?
Do that, Gareth.
I thought you did. Mm. I also
no.
My cousin lives in this gorgeous, gorgeous house where she bought it from a contractor, which says a lot because, I mean, a contractor knows every great new way to make your living experience worth it. Mm-hmm. So there was no expenses spared there. So there's in her bathroom, you know, the lights have a heater situation as well.
Right.
So you can switch the lights on and switch the heater at the same time. So, you know, you're getting light and heat come down.
Ooh.
And just like the sun.
Oh my gosh, it is bliss to be in there. Yes, just like the sun.
You switch on the sun. And that's amazing.
Then she also has heated flooring around her bedroom and the bathroom. And so a couple of days ago, I had to just hear her out, even though I was secretly so jealous. Yes, I'll admit it. She goes, oh, I need to call in someone to just do some little fixing around the house. And I go, what's wrong? She goes, you know, winter's coming. And, you know, just, I can feel it. There's just this tiny portion of the bedroom floor that's not heating properly anymore. Oh. Just this tiny portion.
Oh, if only.
Tiny. But I have to get someone to fix it. And go, honey, some of us don't have any heated flooring at all.
Right.
Yeah. Some of us have fleas coming out of our wooden floors and the wind whistles through the cracks.
I mean, I have one of the things I hate about autumn is all the dead leaves, and then they gather up in like gutters and things, and you have to clean them out, right? Because otherwise you end up with flooding if you have a bizarre rain like we did on Saturday morning. Like I woke up on Saturday and I was just starting my day, and then I looked outside and I thought, my God, it's raining. And it's unusual for it to be raining at this time. And I looked outside and I thought, what the hell's going on here? Now, if you are in the middle of autumn, which is kind of where we've just come out of, and you know, all the leaves are everywhere except on the trees. It looks untidy. It just looks, you know, this is nature's untidy month. And then I suddenly thought, oh shit, I've got to sort out these things now. There's always maintenance. So if someone says to you that, oh, you know, one day when you have money, you would buy a house, just think about it. I don't know that it's always the best advice, because, you know, Sia's cousin might be the right example of how it can go well, like where you have heating in your bathroom and, you know, that you switch on the sun and all that stuff. But the downside is like constant maintenance. You have to fix things. Mm-hmm. You have to clean things out. You have to tidy things up. You have to repaint things. You have to check for cracks here and there and everywhere. Your roof leaks. As Leanne says, you've got things coming out of the woodwork. It's some part of me is like, nah, I should rather just have a landlord and pay them rent, and then they can sort out all that.
Yeah, that's
shit.
The thing. It's a responsibility thing.
Yeah, huge thing.
It all ends up on your shoulders. It's not up to anyone else to fix but you.
Having a house is like having a really, really expensive child who might not talk back, but they give you more headaches. Yeah, that's the way to think about it.
Weigh it out. It all sounds pretty shitty.
I'll tell you what, and everybody thinks, oh, you've made it when you've, you know, bought your first property or whatever. But I think that that's, in some ways, I don't want to get in, you know, I don't want to position myself now as the opposition to all these people who advise you that. But some parts of it are just not as much fun as they look like they are. Anyway, how was Mother's Day, everybody? Did you manage to do anything for your mum? Did you get to see your mum? Did you remember to buy her a little Mother's Day present or anything like that? Make a fuss of her? Leanne, you start.
Yeah. So... yeah, I don't have money at the moment to splurge on gifts, so it's always up to my poor brother.
Yeah,
but he did not the
poor.
Honors.
He's not poor. You are.
Exactly. So he did the honors, and it, you know, the debts. I don't know if you can still hear me. There's a bit of a break in my.
Go on.
My stream.
All good. Ooh, a very a random and often interrupted flow. That's what that is.
Are we still talking about the same
stream?
There we go. Yeah, you're back. Okay, go, Leanne.
I find that the older our mothers get, the easier they are to buy gifts for.
Okay.
So my brother bought her a new pair of slippers for winter, a new blankie to keep on her lap when she's watching TV, and some chocolates. And she actually cried with joy.
Well, can I tell you something?
It's just the simple things, you know?
Those are three gifts that I would really like myself, let alone my mom. New slippers, that's a good gift. I mean, new slippers, a blankie, and what, chocolates, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. I like all of the above, don't you see? I mean, all three of those work for you as well, right?
Classic Mother's Day gifts. You cannot go wrong there. Well, I yesterday realized partially why some people are always on social media and complaining, because that's how you actually get a response sometimes from these brands who do you dirty.
Yeah.
I had ordered a gift for my mother that was scheduled to get delivered yesterday morning.
All right.
The one day where you really don't want a delivery to get cocked up.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
It's cocked up. So, because I realized I'd scheduled it for 9:30 and 9:30 rolls around, and I hadn't told my mother, and I haven't received like a call or anything from her being surprised, and 10 o'clock rolls around and 11 rolls around. So now I'm like calling people at home. Have you heard anything? Has anyone arrived? Maybe my mother's like off with her friends and that's why she hasn't called. And nothing. So this delivery company had just sent a very, you know, nonchalant email like, hi, we've just decided to reschedule the delivery. I'm like, reschedule the delivery?
I hate that. I'm with you.
It's Mother's Day, damn it.
Right, exactly. You can't be late for that. God, but then it is, yeah, so, you know what, again, it's a planning fault on your side, I'm afraid, because they do that. Yeah. Like, I've ordered such straightforward stuff that you could basically go up the road and get from the nearest shop, yeah, and then they send you one of those notices. So damned annoying. And you're like, what do I have to wait 2 weeks for that for? Just because you guys can't schedule your deliveries. You see how we expect everything now. But did you go on social media and complain about them?
I thought about it, and then I thought, nah, I don't want to be this person. Mm. Because after the calls, and then this one can't really answer, and then they give you, you know, sometimes when you actually call a person in a call center, we did back in the early 2000s, you can tell that they are just reading straight from a script. Thank you for calling X company. How may I help you? And then you are fuming and you are annoyed. Yeah. Sir, thank you very much for voicing your grievances. We have noted them. That's terrible. Well, what are you going to do about it? Well, sir, as we mentioned earlier, we are currently inundated with cases. No. We are sorry.
No, I hate you so much now.
You know, I just decided I'm not going to even care. I called my mother thinking I'm going to really just wish her happy Mother's Day and apologize because the gift hasn't, you know, reached her yet. Mm-hmm. And there is blaring music in the background and you can tell she's in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Mom. Happy Mother's Day. I'm so sorry about my gift. She goes, you. You know what? This is my day. Okay. Can you talk now? She goes, no, I'm on the way to see my own mother. I'm busy. No, yeah.
She could care less. Oh, that's so cool.
Go, okay, Ma, I'll talk to you. Let's go. Sharp. Bye.
Not even interested, hey? You didn't bother her at all. She's too busy in her own thing.
No, all of like a 35-second call. This woman.
Is too funny.
We had an amazing Mother's Day lunch yesterday. We didn't go out anywhere. We went to friends, and they put on the best spread ever.
Mm.
So there were about, you know, because now my sister-in-law is a mother, and my friends, their daughter-in-law is a mother. And so there were about, I don't know, 6 or 7 moms in attendance, and they all got spoiled. But we had this amazing lunch. The hosts cooked the most beautiful lamb in a pizza oven, which is just, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And it was so good. But you know, when you eat and then straight after you've eaten, you're like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get up again after this because it's weighed me down. It was so good. It was just, I went back for so much more. So much more. I felt like a big fat pig. So good though. God, it was nice. So anyway, that was partly my weekend. And then on Friday, I mentioned that one of my friends is out here. His stepdad died a couple of days ago, and he had to fly in from America. And so he came out to, you know, help his mom sort things out and kind of be here for her and all the rest of it. And he said to me on Friday, what are you doing tonight? So I said to him, whatever, because I really had an open weekend. I could do whatever I wanted to. And that doesn't happen often because I usually schedule things. I'll get things done or I'll put a little, you know, list of things I want to do together. Anyway, he came over and I invited 2 or 3 other people around. We ended up having an unbelievably fun night, just so much fun.
Oh.
Like 3 people stayed over at my house and the next morning we all went for breakfast and it was really cool.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, but so the breakfast was a double breakfast as well, because what we did is you could tell he's been living in Texas for a while because he goes, all right, for my first breakfast, I will have Eggs Benedict. And he goes, and for my second breakfast, which we must bring 15 minutes after the first breakfast, I want this one. So I thought, well, all right, let's try that because it was, you know, it was the done thing at the table at that moment. So we all had a double breakfast, which was great.
That's a trend?
I don't know. That's what it was our trend for Saturday morning. And then I just took it easy on Saturday night. But it was really fun. It was a nice weekend and just happy and, you know, family and friends. And, you know, this friend of mine, I was the MC at his wedding when he got married a couple of years ago. And we don't get to see each other that often because he lives so far away. So it was really good to catch up with him and see some other people that I like. Very cool. Ooh. Very, very cool.
I had a weekend that I had been hoping and praying for the longest amount of time. I'm talking weeks on end here.
What's that?
I did not leave the house.
Oh, that's
I know.
That's so good. No, you like you're making me jealous.
People who are, you know, somewhat on lockdown or still working from home.
Right.
It's random to want to stay in the house some more.
Right.
But I don't even think I left the house on Friday either, like even during the day. Mm. So Friday right up until, well, I'm going to leave the house today, did not even go to the car park. Or the gate. I did not see anyone. And my flatmate was gone for the weekend. So I had the place all to myself.
Uh-huh.
The only person I saw this weekend was like the delivery guy once. I'm like scoffing something down my throat. But other than that, it was great.
I'm telling you, like, COVID has made us a little bit more hermity, and most of us don't mind it. Most of us don't mind being extra hermity. Anyway, there was stuff that happened over the weekend. I'm not sure if you got to see any of the clips on social media of Elon Musk on Saturday Night Live. Did anybody see that?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. So here's.
So yeah, he hosted it.
Yeah, that's right. And here's Elon hosting Saturday Night Live. And here he is with his mother, Mae Musk, who's like the world's oldest supermodel, and she's fantastic, an awesome woman,
and with a very South African accent. No mistake.
Yeah.
Say like fire, South Africans.
I told you she and my mom used to play as kids together, which I found out the other day entirely by chance, which is so weird. Yeah, their parents were all friends, so. It's an interesting link. I just wish that, you know, my mother had stayed at friends with her, and then I could have been friends with Elon Musk now. That would have been good.
Yes.
Anyway, none of that. No
I don't think he made friends that easily.
No, I mean,
I didn't know that he had Asperger's. And I'd never heard it from him himself.
Hmm.
And it was interesting in this intro, he mentioned that he has Asperger's. It was a very well written intro, and he did it the best that he could. His mom kind of really read the teleprompter, so it sounded like. It sounded like, you know, she was pretending to act. I don't know. I have this kind of new respect for him now that I know that he has Asperger's, and it explains a lot for me. In his demeanor and the things he says.
He's a bit weird. I mean, you kind of thought that he was totally normal, you know, because he's...
Like he said himself, he said, I've invented electric cars and I'm sending people to Mars. Did you expect me to be a normal, cool guy?
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought that was funny,
But he is the real Iron Man, so in some ways he is the coolest guy in the world. And... You know, it's very en vogue at the moment to say that you've got some kind of problem. It's almost like a way of making yourself approachable and acceptable to some people. Because if you seem like you've got it all together and your life is actually quite good and you're a normal, well-adjusted person, a lot of people fall off. They're kind of like, oh, well, that person's too perfect. It makes me feel bad. Because you know what people are like. It's always about me, 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 me. In fact, today we're going to be speaking to somebody who I've wanted to reintroduce to the show for some time, Dr. Hanan Bushkin, who is a renowned psychologist. He's the head of anxiety and trauma at the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic. And he can talk to us a little bit about kind of the effect of all these changes on our lives and what that means for people. Because, you know, we always talk very openly about mental illness on this show, and we don't make any distinction between physical and mental illness. We're pretty much advocates of that and always have been, right, Leanne?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just very fitting in the times that we're in at the moment. My psychiatrist says that she has never seen so many people during COVID. Well, people who were absolutely broken and had to be admitted.
So I totally buy that. And I can see that for many people, this is a very, very difficult time. And that's why we want to get Hanan on. But there are also lots and lots of people who have started to see mental illness as almost like a trendy thing to have. And I don't mean by, you know, I'm certainly not talking about those who genuinely have something going on. But it seems also like there are a lot of people who are claiming to be anxious, even though anxiety is just a part of life. And we'll ask him about this, because I do feel there are some people who are overplaying their cards. There are people with real problems, and we've got to take those people very seriously. And then there are people who are saying they have problems because it makes them seem and appear to be interesting, or that they are normal in their abnormality, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and what you said is so true. Just because you experience any bit of anxiety or any bit of sadness doesn't mean that you're ailed with this ailment for the rest of your life. And feeling anxious is definitely a part of the human body and the way that our system works and our hormones. And, you know, it's good to feel anxious. If we didn't, we wouldn't get anything done. If we had a deadline for Monday and we just left you know, we'd all be in the soup.
Well, don't tell me that our ancestors didn't have far more anxiety than we did. Things were always trying to kill them. Other people were trying to kill them. They lived in the most unstable times imaginable. So I look at a lot of these people who claim that anxiety is a serious problem in their lives, and I go, lucky you that you live now, because whatever you're going through now is nothing compared to what two generations ago your ancestors were going through. And don't tell me they weren't anxious. They were probably way more anxious than you are, but it was part of life to them. They couldn't go and sit down with a psychologist. Psychologists didn't exist two generations ago, and they couldn't go and sit down and talk to a therapist or get medication for their anxiety. So, you know, some of it is like, man the fuck up, in my opinion. Some of it is,
I still wonder how the first psychologist came to be. I really do. Like, there was someone who said, oh, I'm also here, but I can help you. I know better than you. Like, is it I know it's a random thought to have.
No, well, I mean, remember, some psychologists are not sitting there saying we know better than you. They're actually just giving you the opportunity to tell another person who's listening to you, who's actually interested to listen, to tell your story and to tell them where you're at. Because a lot of people don't have any kind of support system or any support structure in their lives. And at the most basic level, you know, this is kind of where the philosophers used to do that job. Philosophers like Carl Jung and, you know, people like that, they'd give you a philosophy to live by. And religion has done that for people for many years. Your therapy session was actually go to church and to quietly listen to some sermon, which would hopefully give you the guidance you required in life. For many people, that's no longer the best way to get the help that they need. They also don't necessarily have communities, so they feel very isolated. And during COVID, people have felt extremely isolated. So, you know, they may have needed someone to talk to. And then, obviously, from there, it gets more and more complicated. But we'll talk to Hanan about this. He's the expert. And he really is. He's definitely the man of the moment, because I see, you know, we've spoken to Nina Hasty. She's been to him, and we had Gilly Apta on the other day, and she's been to him. And there's lots of famous people and people who are, you know, who are really looking for answers, and they go to Hanan. So maybe he can give us some answers this morning. And maybe if you are suffering with something, just a word of advice from him may put you on the right track. And he may have something really breakthrough to share with you, which I'm hoping will happen for many people. So that's coming up later. Very exciting. Let's do the headlines before we get too caught up in other stuff. So first thing you need to know this morning, this is from EWN. South African police have refuted claims that security for the KZN royal family has been withdrawn. So a couple of interesting things happened over the weekend. Many people may have woken up on Saturday morning to the news that the new king is Misuzulu Ka Zwelithini, who's the son of King Zwelithini and the Queen Regent, who died just a short while ago. He has apparently been whisked away by bodyguards after a tense situation developed in Nongoma. The police say their security has not been withdrawn. Apparently, the king was taken away. This was after the Queen Regent's will was read, naming him as her preferred successor to King Goodwill Zwelithini. The police said that they were still providing protection. So, you know what? This Zulu monarchy is about as unstable as it was in the day of King Shaka, where he was murdered by his two brothers, Dingaan and not Mpande, but the other one. I can't remember his name. But, you know, nothing's changed in the Zulu royal family. The biggest danger is from within. So they need police protection all the time. It's interesting to know.
Now, if you woke up to the news on Saturday, then you missed the live action of it all. Because I was watching live on Friday night, and I felt like, it wasn't like struggle envy, but I felt like I was living through a bit of history. So, firstly, tell us what actually happened. Yeah, the Zulu Nation has seen like three different leaders in the space of 2 months, if you really think about it. That's quite twisted. Mm-hmm. But yeah, all of the news channels were right outside for the afternoon leading to the evening, because it was just the announcement that the Queen's will was going to get read out. Mm-hmm. But already the great suspicions. Sorry, Leanne, I use the word. Or that, you know, the now king was going to be king because he is the first, like, thoroughbred royal. I know I'm using the wrong terminology, but okay. And as soon as his name was announced and it was official, he was taken straight out of the palace, and we saw that play out on screen. He was rushed from the palace and into a car and this great security convoy, and there were crowds at the palace because now people were worried about his security, the convoy. It was like a fight broke out between, it looked like a civilian or perhaps a member of the royal family and someone from the SAPS. And we were trying to figure out what was this fight going on. And then out of nowhere, with all of these cars stuck in the middle of the road, the convoy had to like make its way through these cars and drive off into chaos. The night to keep the king in secret. Now, it really, as a couple of people were tweeting, they were tweeting these producers of these soapies going, yeah, hey, don't be talking about what is happening in some random mansion in a fictional Johannesburg suburb. This is what you should be writing about. Yeah. Make the South African version of The Crown. This is, well, the script is writing.
Yeah,
itself.
I mean, it is chaotic and kind of disheveled and a bit manic. It's really, if you ask me, it's not the greatest foot forward for the new king to have this as his, you know, opening act. I just think it looks very messy and very like random and chaotic. You should have, after at least, what is it now, the Zulu monarchy in its current form, 200, 250 years of this, and they still haven't figured out how to do a peaceful transition of power. This could be at the heart of your problems, I'm just saying. Guys, maybe you should have a better system. No one has built systems in 250 odd years that can handle this better. And don't give me that, oh, you don't understand our traditions thing, because that's nonsense. I have studied this stuff. And I won't be spoken down to like that just because I have a point to make about a monarchy I'm actually interested in. You know, I mean, most people say, oh, you know, who cares? But I actually do care. I think like this, that there should be better management of this. And Mangosuthu Buthelezi, I saw him involved and now he's not involved. And I mean, the guy's 94 years old. You know, he's an old man, but it just looks crazy. It looks like it's a mess. Guys have got to tidy their shit up there. So I hope King Misuzulu does a good job of that, because we need someone in the throne who can actually make things happen now. And hopefully he's secure enough in his throne at the moment. There isn't another person in the family trying to kill him, and he can get on with being king. This is a horrible story. I don't know if you've seen, there was so much about this on social media too, but South African rapper Keenan Forbes, that's AKA, has lambasted allegations of violence and drug abuse during his relationship with his now late fiance Anele Tembe. This comes after a friend of the late Anele Tembe spoke out against abuse, and they posted pictures of a broken door in their Johannesburg apartment with claims that AKA had hit her in the face and pushed against a wall during a fight. He claims that these are being used to fuel a negative narrative of his character, and he put out a statement which doesn't really say a whole lot. But News 24 has obtained a video which has since been handed to police, where AKA can be seen using his hands to violently break down a wooden door to enter the bedroom in the couple's apartment in Bryanston, where Temba was hiding. Fragments of the door can be seen scattered on the bedroom floor. In the statement, AKA describes his relationship with his late fiancé as beautiful yet challenging, saying he was aware of people who contacted the media in an attempt to tarnish his name and influence the ongoing police inquest into her death. Remember, she fell from the 10th floor of a hotel in Cape Town in April this year. And in a shocking, you know, a story that kind of took us all by surprise, the police are now investigating to see exactly what happened. But this is such an ugly story, and it just goes to show, you know, sometimes when you're famous, everything is that much more complicated. And I'm not making excuses for AKA, but whatever was happening here, it doesn't look kosher. And clearly these two were not as happy as everybody thinks they were. Whatever was happening, that's about the truth, right? Mm. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah.
You've been paying attention?
No, but I'm just thinking about what you said about being famous and dealing with this stuff as a normal person is enough.
No, exactly.
Imagine with social media, the pressure, people who don't know a thing about it, who are judging you and spewing stuff out. It's just got to be terrible, man.
Well, I mean, basically people are insinuating, that AKA may have had something to do with her death, that there was a huge amount of abuse in the relationship. And we don't know, we weren't in the room. But if that is true, then it feeds a very different narrative to the one that we were sold, which is that this is precisely one of the big problems in South Africa. And, you know, we've got this gender-based violence problem. And if we've got people breaking down doors, it's not a good sign. I mean, I don't think I've ever broken down a door, even for the right reasons, let alone the wrong ones. So, don't know.
How do you get to that point?
Yeah.
I wonder. You know, the news story broke around yesterday morning, and first it was News 24 who said they have this video, which still hasn't been released, but they released screenshots, and that's how we saw AKA breaking down a door. Mm-hmm. And people started making chilling comparisons to Oscar and Reva.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
And that just made me a little ill because, again, we won't know what happened in that room because there were only two of them.
Correct.
And unfortunately, one of them is now not around. A lot of things that make one question what exactly happened there.
The South African police are probing a murder case after a woman was found in the Vaal River. This is quite strange. Yolandi Boetis went missing in Brakpan 2 weeks ago. Father and son made the discovery while fishing at a holiday resort in Villiers in the Free State. God, can you imagine that, finding a body? The police said some of the body parts of the white woman were found. Police are still searching for other parts of the body. The body is that of a woman who was reported missing in Brakpan on the 6th of April. Police are appealing to anyone with information to help them resolve this murder case. Terrible, terrible story. And, you know, just really upsetting, obviously, to find, you know, a body floating in the Vaal River. In China, they announced a while ago that they have a rogue rocket, right, that is in an uncontrolled free fall towards Earth. And it seems nobody knows where or when exactly it'll burn through the atmosphere. And they said that there could be debris falling. It could hit an inhabited area. But they're not that worried. They say the chances of that are very small. But on April the 29th, China launched a module of its Heavenly Palace space station, a milestone in Beijing's ambitious plan to establish a permanent presence in space. The module was propelled by a powerful Long March 5B rocket, whose first stage is currently descending earthward. Apparently, from a low Earth orbit, bodies are drawn gradually by gravity towards the surface of the planet. Look, we know that. But such objects are usually consumed by heat as friction from an increasingly dense atmosphere as it approaches Earth. But the Long March rocket is so big, it weighs like 18 tons, that it is unlikely to burn up entirely. So stupid Chinese government and the stupid Chinese space program has probably created crap in our atmosphere that is now going to rain down upon us. And that, you know, some nations pretend to be ready for the 21st century, but they actually just come out of the agrarian revolution. And I'm disappointed in China because this proves to you they're not as great as they think they are. I mean, this is embarrassing on every level, and I'm not going to gild the lily for China. Finally, our last headline. In the United States, a gunman, how often do we start a headline like that? A gunman opened fire at a birthday party in Colorado, killing six people in the early hours of Sunday before taking his own life. Colorado Springs police responded shortly after midnight to an emergency call at a mobile home park, where they found six adults shot dead and one adult male who was seriously injured. He was transported to a local hospital where he passed away from his injuries. Horrible story, right?
Hmm.
Yeah. There's a sneeze for... this morning's...
sneeze face.
Yeah, this morning's benefit bonus sneeze, right? You know I do that as often as I can. And let's go to the comments, and then we'll get to Dr. Hanan in a second. Pichang saying, I thought the object already fell somewhere towards the Maldives early on Sunday morning. Well, no, that's not what I have from the news, but we'll check that out. Carl DeSantos said, if AKA had a cricket bat, he wouldn't have had to use his hands to break that door. Well, that's a reference to Oscar, right? And the Oscar Pistorius situation. But it is the similarity between those two stories is very, very upsetting.
I've thrown my hockey stick through a door once.
Really?
When I was in high school, yeah, I was so angry. It was a boyfriend that I had for 7 years. So from the age of 13 to 21, I dated this guy, and he cheated on me multiple times, and just never admitted it.
Sure.
So anyway, when I confronted him the once, I was in my bedroom.
Yeah.
And I was so angry that I threw my hockey stick at him, and it ended up, puncturing the door.
Leanne.
So I had to explain that one to my parents.
Leanne, you know, violence is never the answer. Violence is the question. Yes is the answer. Terrible thing to say. All right, let's bring in someone who's going to bring some sensible consideration into this conversation. So we're going to talk to Dr. Hanan Bushkin, who is a renowned psychologist. He's the head of the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic. And Hanan, I don't know why we've got a little bit of feedback on your line there, but it's there we go. It's gone now. It's good to have you on here. You are one of the people who can help us make sense of all of this bizarre stuff that's going on around us. I mean, people really are struggling to deal with the changes in the workplace. Surveys obviously are showing us that depression, anxiety, and suicides have increased all over the world. We were talking very much about this before you came on. And I suppose let's just start off with the kind of general analysis that we need to take in terms of the way society has adapted or not adapted to what's going on around us. And then I want us to get into some very practical things, because I know you hate the idea of just talking in generalities, and you hate the idea of the fact that we're going to come and lie down on your couch for a while this morning. You're going to analyze us. That's not how you work. So let's go straight to the core of this, but we do need to make some general comments about what's going on, because I think people are struggling at the moment, right?
Absolutely. The brain really likes to be able to predict what's coming up next. The moment I know what's coming up next, that's why routine is so important. The brain feels safe. The moment I don't know what's coming up next, the brain starts to start going like a hurricane, trying to figure out, am I going to be eaten by this tiger or by this crocodile? Or what's behind this door? So, pre-pandemic, we could semi-predict. The world was changing all the time, but not at this rate. But during this pandemic, we don't know what's coming up next. Are we going into a third wave? How's the vaccine? What's happening with the vaccine? Mask on, mask off. We actually don't know. Schools, and are they opening up? Are they closing down restaurants? The world is changing at such a fast rate that the brain just cannot adapt. It can't catch up. So all it does, it just spins. It looks for option A. If option A doesn't happen, I'm going to leads me to option B. What if option B doesn't happen? And it just turns into chaos. That's why anxiety has just shot up during this pandemic, because the general consensus, I don't know what's coming up next, and I don't know what to do with what I have in front of me. We don't have a manual for this. We haven't been presented with a go-to cheat sheet, and that's why everybody's just spinning.
So, I mean, you obviously treat a number of people because you're a clinician as well, but – there is a lot of uncertainty, as you say, but there's also this funny thing that's going on that people were having problems before the pandemic came along. Let's not mess around. I mean, there are loads and loads of people who've got undiagnosed conditions or thought they were coping, and this has given them the pretext to be able either to confront their real problems or to use the pandemic as an excuse for what they didn't deal with before. And that's also something we've got to be very honest about, right?
You know what? All these issues that are coming up now were there way before the pandemic hit. The pandemic just gives people a reason and an excuse and a justification to actually talk about it. If I'm having an issue with my wife, as an example, and I can kind of block it and block it, but the moment we get on a roller coaster, a real roller coaster, imagine me going to Gold Rush City, getting on one of those anacondas. Please believe me, all my issues with my wife are coming up right there and then. And it's not that I invented them on the roller coaster. They were always there. But because I was spinning, literally, I gave myself permission to bring it up. You never do the dishes. You never do this. You never do look after the kids. You never have whatever, many different things. So this pandemic, this anaconda that we are going through didn't raise or bring or create any issues. It just gave us permission now to talk about it. So now we can talk about our difficult boss and our difficult relationship and how sick and tired I am of the work-life balance. So this spinning that we're going through, this anaconda, so to speak, it just gives us a reason to kind of talk about it now.
All right, so let's talk about it. I mean, anxiety. We were saying earlier, and this is where I need you to apply your mind to what we're just talking about as pedestrians, but anxiety is something that has always affected humans. Some people say it's just part of everyday life, and a certain level of anxiety is completely normal. But because a lot of us have got to find an excuse to not do things or to do things a different way, I get the impression that a lot of people are claiming anxiety as almost some kind of prize in order to either excuse themselves or to allow themselves to get into bad habits. Do you think that's fair? I mean, I do take very seriously the case for mental health issues and some people who are diagnosed with very serious conditions, and we know anxiety can be paralyzing for some people. Those people are exempt from this comment. But the ones I'm talking about, there seems to be like almost a cool factor these days. I blame Hollywood for this, but people claiming mental health issues when actually they're just dealing with normal day-to-day anxiety.
So I want to tell you a story. You know, when I went through my master's and we went through a whole psychopathology book, the A to Z of psychopathology, it's a book this thick.
Yeah.
And it goes through all the disorders, A right through to Z. And something interesting happens. You start with antisocial personalities and you go right to their Zs. And something interesting happens when you read through it. You start with antisocial and you read the symptoms and you go, shit, I've got this. And then you move into the bipolar and you go, shit, I've got this too. And then you move into the anxiety and the depressions and the schizophrenia. You go, I have this too. So you actually realize that we as human beings, we've got bits and pieces of everything. If I do a test on and I look for reasons of why I'm anxious, I will find it. If I look for reasons of why I'm depressed, I will find it. If I look for reasons of why I'm paranoid, I will find it. We have bits and pieces of everything we are. That's what makes us beautiful and unique and human. To say somebody doesn't have anxiety is insane. As a matter of fact, anxiety in the right context is very important. If a lion comes in through this door right now, I need to feel anxious because that anxiety will help me fight or flight. If I get bullied at school, I need to feel depressed because depression builds up this shield that protects me and makes me avoid things. I need to feel anger. Anger is very important, especially when I'm being confronted with someone that I need to push away. Mm-hmm. Any emotion that you can think of on the planet has a purpose in the right context.
Right.
In the right context. In the right context, it's incredible. So when somebody says to me, oh, I sometimes feel anxious, I'm like, good for you. Oh, Hanan, I sometimes feel depressed. Well, good for you too. Mm. Oh, Hanan, sometimes I'm paranoid. Well, good for you too. The truth is every emotion has a reason in the right context. The problem is when we have these emotions when they do not serve a purpose any longer. So when I feel anxious for no reason, for no valid reason. If I feel depressed, for no valid reason. If I feel any emotion, anger, frustration, guilt. Guilt is such an important emotion. You know, guilt, people say, oh, Hanan, I feel guilty. Well, good for you. How can guilt be helpful? Well, guilt helps me assimilate into a group. People that don't feel guilty, we send them away to prisons. They're not welcome in our social structures. So guilt is actually very important. But when I feel guilty for no valid in inverted commas, valid reasons, that's when it begins to break me down. That's when it becomes toxic. So I agree with you that people use these diagnoses as a way to feel stuck because it's much easier. And by the way, 99% of people use diagnoses as a way to get stuck because it's much easier to stay in my comfort zone and kind of wallow in what I feel and have perhaps other people feel sorry for me than actually step out of my comfort zone and create some change. So yeah, of course I can get stuck because I've got bipolar. Of course I can get stuck because I'm suffering from borderline personality disorder. Of course I can get stuck because I'm suffering from major depression. I'm very much against this whole idea of diagnosis as a reason to stay stuck. The truth is you have a choice. This is where you're at. The past has happened, which has created this moment. The past has happened that's created this character. The past has happened that has created these resources. Okay, I got it. What are we going to do about it now to get you from point A to point B? Because we can spend time talking about it. We can spend time wallowing and finding out reasons of why your mother is the reason why you have anxiety at the moment. Mm-hmm. But what are we going to do about it? How do we move you from point A to point B? Is it difficult? Incredibly. Is it heartbreaking? Unbelievably so. But is it doable? 100%.
Well, I mean, Leanne, I don't mean to refer this to you because you've got problems, but because you've spoken about so much of this stuff with us on the show before, and you're very open about your own issues, whether they be of an anxiety or a depression nature, of, you know, your paranoia about the world, especially since COVID. I mean, does what Rael say? I mean, Rael, we're talking about another guest who's coming on. Does Hanan make sense to you? I mean, is what he's saying striking a chord? You're on mute. There she is.
My connection's really bad. I only heard about 10% of what you said.
Oh, shit, sorry.
But, yeah, so, yes, I mean, I was diagnosed 22 years ago, and I've been on medication for 22 years. There's definitely a difference between having anxiety in episodes and due to things that are going on in your life, or whether it's genetic and it's something that you're predisposed to. But yes, at times it's absolutely debilitating. And the thing is to do exactly what you're saying is to just move on and looking at the future and how to get over what's happened. And I think there's also a very big difference between guilt and shame.
Right. It's for some reason you've frozen, Leanne. I'm just going to take you off of there for the moment. So first of all, she touched on a lot of things there. I mean, do you agree with broadly what she said? And then I'm interested in that question of the difference between guilt and shame.
So let me address one thing, which is actually very, very important for me to mention. These emotions can be debilitating, but let's not confuse debilitating and I can't do anything about it and debilitating and I can do something about it. Mm-hmm. I also want to highlight that just because you don't know what to do doesn't mean nothing can be done about it. If my car's stuck, I've got no ideas on how to fix my car, but it doesn't mean that it can't be fixed.
Right.
So a lot of people with these so-called mental disorders or mental conditions or mental illnesses or mental diagnoses, they're stuck. 99% of people that have a mentally diagnosed illness, all it is about is either I don't know what I want or I don't know how to get it. I don't know what I want or I don't know how to get it. And right. Just because you don't know how to get yourself unstuck, it doesn't mean that you can't get yourself unstuck. I completely feel this empathy towards people that feel these debilitating emotions and they feel like, I don't know what to do about it. But I also want to tell everybody that does have these debilitating emotions, you can get yourself unstuck. Therapy these days is very different to how it was 60 years ago, where you lay on the couch, we ask you how your mother treated you, and you hopefully felt better in 25 years. These days, we know exactly what needs to be done to get you unstuck.
Right.
So, by the way, my approach, and I need to say this, my approach is very direct, but it completely is very kind of the basis of it, and the foundation is with kindness. I feel sorry for people, but not sorry in the way like, oh, shame, let you swallow, but rather, hey, I hear you, but we can get you unstuck.
All right, and what Leanne referred to in that difference between guilt and shame, do you want to just comment on that? Because I think that's really interesting, and many of us may not know the difference.
Guilt in the appropriate sense is very, very good. As I've explained, it helps you assimilate into a group. Mm-hmm. We are, from age zero, we are taught certain rules, first by our parents on how to behave, then society, culture, country, religion teaches us right from wrong. The moment I behave within the rule set, I feel fine. The moment I step outside of the rule set, I feel guilty. And as I said, with the right rules, it's very, very appropriate and very healthy, because I need to behave. I can't cross the road by myself when I'm 3 years old, when my mother tells me, you've got to hold my hand. I should feel guilty the moment I attempt to not do that, because that's very good, because the guilt will make me call my mom and hold her hand while I'm crossing the road. So guilt is very appropriate. But the moment you start blaming yourself for the events that have happened to you, that's when it becomes shame. Shame is a very, very destructive emotion. What have I done? What's my role? Why is it my fault? Why is it my fault? And as a matter of fact, not even why is it my fault, it is my fault. The truth is, life happens. We go through ups, we go through downs. We can't control 90% of the stuff that happens to us. And you should never blame yourself for what has happened, but you can and you must take responsibility for where you are now. It's okay, you're an adult. It doesn't mean that you have all wonderful feelings. We have good, we have bad feelings, but you can do something about it. You can get in the driver's seat as opposed to sit in the passenger seat and watch your life go by. You know, my favorite quote of all time is, if you're not the chess player of your life, you're a pawn in someone else's. And if you don't know where you're going, you will always end up where other people want you to take you.
Yeah.
And the reality is, think about it. If I know I'm heading to Cape Town, I know that's my goal. That's where I want to go. If somebody comes along and says, hey, Hanan, can I have a lift to Bloom? No, because I'm going to Cape Town. But if I don't know where I'm going and somebody says, hey, can I have a lift to Bloom? Sure. So 20 years later, I was everywhere for everyone else, but not me. If you don't have a goal, you will naturally live at somebody else's goal. But listen, setting goals is very, very, very difficult because it requires grief. The moment I commit to Cape Town, I have no choice, but I have to let go of Joburg.
Right.
And who wants to let go of Joburg?
Yeah.
And the worst possible case scenario is you want to go to Cape Town, but wish you were in Joburg. That's what people are. I want to be married, but I want to be single too.
Yeah.
I want to work for this job, but I want to be an entrepreneur.
Right.
I want to do this, but I also want to do that. That is when you're going to spin on that roller coaster, and that's when you're going to feel anxious, depressed, helpless. It's going to break you down.
Look, I mean, I think we've got to do this some more, because I think we're only just scratching the surface here of all the things that we need to talk about. But I think what Hanan has brought up here is just that it's an inkling of what we're going to get into. And I would like to have you come back again, because we're getting so many comments from people, Hanan, who are saying we need you back. What you're saying is such interesting stuff, and I think probably is extremely useful and impacts very negatively on many people's lives. They need the tools, and perhaps you can provide us with a little insight into those tools every now and then when you've got some time. I know you're fully booked up and you're a really busy man, but it's great to have you on the show this morning. Thank you.
Thanks for inviting me. This is great.
What a pleasure. There he is, Dr. Hanan Bushkin. He has got, wow. I mean, the guy's done amazing things. He's worked for more than 18 years on the problem of behavioral patterns and its effect on mood and cognition, as well as in frontline crisis intervention, organizational training. He's been featured and quoted in numerous media outlets and forums, and he's here for us this morning. So that's very good. And I know that there are many of us who would like to hear more from him. So we'll see if we can get him back on. That's Dr. Hanan Bushkin. All right, it is 7 o'clock. We will be back with plenty more, including Collectomania, because it is a Monday. And today we're going to be talking about a collection of watches that will blow your mind. This is just incredible. I mean, if you want to talk about, yeah, I mean, the things that
horology.
Horology, exactly. Thank you, Leanne. Horology is just one category of, yeah, believe me, Sia, there are words for all of this. Apart from this,
I didn't know that's what it was called, but mm-hmm. now that I do and it sounds pretentious, I will be using it more often.
So he's got a collection. He's also in the business of buying and selling high-end luxury watches, which people look at as investments. And we'll talk about those in a short while too. So we got this, this guest, special guest coming up in the next hour on cliffcentral.com. Good morning to you. If you've just joined us, I hope you are having a good start to your day.
Cliffcentral.com.